Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parents in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
Hello, you're listening to Parenting Hell with
Georgia. Can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
And Josh Widdicombe.
Josh Widdicombe.
Well done.
That sounds a bit Bromley, that does.
Not far off. Romford. Where's that? Essex? Where Steve Davis is from, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same sort of accent. It's basically the same people that left East London went to Romford, and the people that left South East London went down to Bromley Way. Right. People in Romford will argue it's still London. People in Bromley will argue it's still London. It sort of is, but it sort of isn't. Who cares?
This is my 2.5-year-old daughter, Georgia.
Put that down. George. That's what people in Romford will call Georgia right. When she's been a bit naughty.
Oh, that's good. I'm getting an image now. They listened four to 5 months ago, gone back and listened to every episode.
Fucking right and all.
Yes. I have recently started commuting into work again, so try and save your podcast to keep me entertained on the days I'm travelling in. Keep up the good work, and thank you for bringing some laughs into my week. Ashley from Romford. How are you, Rob?
Big up Romford. Big up the Romford Massive. Big John, Johnny Fisher. The Romford Bull Army. There's a boxer from Romford who's doing really well, a prospect. And his dad, Big John's famous on TikTok. You should do a collab with him.
Oh, I'm not going to do a collab
with him. He goes, Bosh.
What's a collab?
Bosh. Basically, you team up with someone else.
Together?
Yeah, and then he says Bosh at the end of everything.
He could say Josh at the end of it.
Josh. Yeah, you'd love it, Josh. Once you get into it, you can share your ideas, you and Big John. A Bosch.
Well, I'm still working on my ideas. I'll give them to you on Tuesday.
He nicked the Bosch from Tom Skinner from The Apprentice. Anyway, so getting a bit Essex heavy. How are you?
All right, I'm excited because you've got a new feature idea for the show.
Yeah, well, I think it's really good, this. Okay, so basically, I think what's good about this show is we're really honest and talk about stuff. And especially with like mental health stuff, people go, you've got to talk, just talk. But sometimes just talk is quite awkward, isn't it? Because you don't know where to start. So I thought this is a good way to sort of have that message of being open and talking, but in a fucking interesting way, rather than some really annoying, you know, people are just a bit worthy, aren't they? And it just gets a bit boring, where it actually needs to be entertaining, even if it is for a good cause. So here's this, right? Okay, this is when... when in your life has there ever been a moment where you think, do you know what, if a therapist walked through the door now, it'd be perfect timing? Okay, so hear me out, but not a really bleak moment. Everyone gets really down. If your parents passed away, you feel down. That's grief. That's not you having a bit of a moment. That's just your body experiencing a feeling, an emotion that you have to process, blah, blah, blah. So it's just like strange behaviour. For example, once I was trying to drive to my brother's house in Coulsdon and I got lost in Croydon in the one-way system, and I was a bit late, but they were indoors. It didn't really matter. You know, it wasn't like someone's waiting at a platform or something. And I got so angry, I started crying and punching my steering wheel. And I'd argue the problem there isn't Croydon.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Do you know what the problem was? Did you ever get to the bottom of that main issue?
No, I'm still working that out. But, the first step is accepting there is an issue, Judge. And so at that moment, if a therapist got in the car with me and went, you okay, mate? That would have been the perfect timing. So, like, you know when you had that panic attack?
This happened one time. Was it recently?
No. This was years ago. I was only like 17. But it was the first time, I think, as a sort of semi-grown-up, I really realised that there were certain emotions I wasn't dealing with properly.
This isn't about Croydon.
This isn't the same way, you know, when the guy in the outdoor gym started having a go at you and you went, this isn't about the gym, is it?
Yeah.
But you know when you had a panic attack in that train station, was it King's Cross?
Yeah. Fingers crossed, yeah.
And what was that, to remind the listeners? You just, was it on the toilet floor or something?
It was, yeah, toilet floor, a first-class lounge, just to be clear, because I just done Live at the Apollo. I had to get to the Leeds to do a tour show.
Yeah.
And so the production company, because Live at the Apollo had come in late, they'd got me the tickets up so that I could could enjoy the toilet floor at King's Cross.
It's cleaner, though, to be fair, the first-class lounge toilet.
Do you know what? I'd really recommend it. If you're going to have a panic attack on any floor, that is the one. And yet, there is an argument that wasn't about Live at the Apollo.
Yes, or your gig that night. And if a therapist had walked in and went, "You're right, mate," then that would have been the perfect time.
I've locked the door here, mate. This is unacceptable.
I could talk to you through the door.
Also, how much money are you making as a therapist? This is the first class lounge, mate.
They earn a lot. Because I think the thing is, when you are recognising odd behaviour, is sort of the first step in getting a handle on it.
Yeah.
So if we can make this a fun feature of people talk about it in a carefree, funny story way, rather than a big, horrible secret about... Because some people would have happened to you or happened to me in Croydon and would never share it, but there's no benefit not to share it because there's no shame or embarrassment. That's just how the world can get on top of you at times. So I think it's a fun little feature. So if there's things that have happened... where you think it's not about Croydon, it's not about the train, it's not about Live at the Apollo.
I haven't had many panic attacks in my life, but I could tell you a funnier place I've had a panic attack. Well, maybe not funnier.
Well, it depends.
On a Peloton.
On a Peloton? During the Peloton?
During a Peloton class.
But your heart rate must have been through the roof.
I was, honestly, mate.
Burned so many calories.
Little tip, if you're feeling really stressed, a Peloton isn't a way to burn off the stress, it turns out. If anything, it's a way to double down on the stress.
Yeah. If your heart's working too hard and you're getting hot.
I was like, I can just pound this out of me. I'll just get on the Peloton and I'll just kind of work this adrenaline out of my body. But what I did was doubled down on the adrenaline. Also, it really affects your stats if you suddenly stop pedaling for a few minutes because you're having a panic attack.
That's the least of your worries, isn't it?
And then
at
you
that
get
stage.
More stressed about that. It's a vicious circle.
That's the problem with cycling, isn't it? It's just a loop. Especially when you're still in your garage at the end of the garden, facing your house and all your responsibilities, pedaling to nowhere. So I think that's quite a good feature. So it doesn't have to be a parenting, but it can be.
If I was to give anyone any advice on that as well, just on the panic attack thing, the car map I've been using recently is fucking incredible.
Oh, really?
I was stressed coming back from the last leg last night because my main reason for stress was because we now film it in Hammersmith and it takes so long to get home. And I was just like, I can't believe it's 12 and I'm not even out of West London. But then I did 10 minutes on the car map and I basically fell asleep in the car. It was incredible. So I'd really recommend, if you are feeling stressed, downloading that app.
Well, that's a good idea. So we do this. People tell you, you tell your story of when you sort of had a strange reaction to something or strange behaviour. Yeah. Where if a therapist going, we need a name for this, Josh. We'll work on the name.
Yeah.
Where if a therapist turned up, it would have been very helpful. And then let us know what it is you do to calm yourself down now that you've sort of learned from that experience. Yeah. So I listen to a thing on Spotify. Sometimes even if I wake up in the middle of the night, a bit anxious, because I get more anxious now during the night than in the day, because I've got coping strategies in the day that I can't use at night because I'm out of it, obviously. So I listen to this. It's called Just Trust the Universe, and it's a little hour-long speech by a guy called Alan Watts, and it's on Spotify. If you look for Alan Watts, and it's called Just Trust the Universe, it's like an hour long, so I sort of listen to that, and he's quite calm.
Your
the way he talks.
Your end-of-year rap on Spotify must be bizarre. Arctic Monkeys, Professor Alan Watts. And then Kasabian.
Exactly. If you've got any of those stories of times where you've reacted oddly in a situation and it wasn't about the situation, it was deeper stuff. You don't have to tell us the deeper stuff, obviously.
No.
The location that you found yourself a bit overwhelmed and what you do now to help with that. And I think it's a better way to talk and get things out as opposed to just making it some sort of stressful intervention sit down. So that's my new idea for a feature, Josh.
Good. And we should warn people, we will try and make comedy out of it. So don't, if you're very sensitive about it, do send it in. We're going to try and take a humorous angle
of course.
On it.
Yeah, and if you can't handle that, fuck off, is essentially. But in a calm way. In a calm way.
Fuck off and have a meditate.
Oh, just fucking chill out, mate. Fucking put your feet up. Stop worrying. Kid hell. Josh, before we introduce Brian Connolly, our guest this week, have you heard that we are stopping Eurovision from happening?
Yeah, I did. Do you know what? I heard this in a last leg meeting. Because they were like, have you seen the news about this Eurovision thing? No one had told me. Who told you?
Someone tweeted me about it. Basically, They've got no... Because Ukraine won Eurovision, but they can't have Eurovision there, obviously. So the UK, who came second, are hosting. But there's no venues big enough. They need an arena, but all the arenas are booked out. And most of them are booked out by us for the live show.
I know. And they're going to... But they're going to turf us out, Rob.
They're not, are they?
They are.
Who?
The bloody Eurovisions.
No, we have... No, we've got that. We're contracted out, mate. They'll have to buy us out. They're trying to get people to move their shows.
They've narrowed it down to two of... No, they've narrowed it down to eight potential venues and we're in two of them during the...
On those days.
Eurovision needs a month of the venue.
What are they doing in there?
What the fuck's going on there? Just practice in a different
building.
They'll
go in there to write the song. Yeah. They'll write the song in a month. It would explain a lot.
So, it's like us and Elton John and people like that are doing these venues currently and it's like... What's going to happen regarding Eurovision? So we'll wait and see.
We haven't heard from the venues. This is the first we've heard of it.
We've heard nothing. This is the first we've heard about it. Was our names were mentioned in the news as the people stopping Eurovision from happening?
I like Eurovision. I want it to happen. In boxing, normally, so in boxing, if you've got a mandatory, something you have to fight when you're the champion.
Yeah.
What you can do is if you say, for example, Anthony Joshua. If he beats Alexander Usyk, and he may have a mandatory where he's got to defend one of his belts against someone, but obviously the Tyson Fury fight's going to be millions and millions, he'll say to that mandatory, here's £500,000, take that if you let me fight Tyson Fury first, because he's going to earn so much money from that one, he can give the money out like that. I'm not saying that the Eurovision need to pay us, but it would help take the pressure off to move stuff around.
It would oil the wheels, wouldn't it? But don't panic if you've got tickets to everywhere but Manchester and Birmingham.
They are still going ahead.
You'll be fine. They're all safe from these Eurovision bastards. But Birmingham and Manchester are the ones these Eurovision are sniffing around.
Do you think we could get moved like a compulsory purchase order? You know, like when they're doing Crossrail.
I don't know what our rights are, Rob. I don't know what our rights are. Like, we're here. We're meant to be there.
Who would win in a fight?
What, between us and Rylan?
Yeah.
I think Rylan, he's got big reach. He's athletic, isn't he?
Right, okay, so here we go. Me and you versus Rylan and Graham Norton in a straightener in the street. The winner takes all.
Oh, I think Norton is fit.
Do you know what? He looks strong, doesn't he? Like a fucking ox.
Yeah.
Hairy and fucking solid. Where Ryland's a tall guy, but I think he's rangy. I think he might gas out. I don't think he's got the... He's thin, but I don't think he's got the cardio. Where I think Norton would go for hours.
Yeah, I think...
fucking rocket.
I think what would happen is Ryland would cause some initial damage before blowing out, and then Norton would just finish us off over 6 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I think it... What do you reckon? You could take Ryland and I have a go at Norton.
I think you've got to put me and Norton, the two small ones, up.
Yeah, but I'm only an inch taller than you, Josh. Ryland's 6'7". And he wears heels. I'll never reach him. I'll have to bite his ankles.
Do you know what? I'm going to make an offer to Eurovision now. We will step aside if you let us be those ones that they cross to read out the English scores.
Yes, please. We'll do that. And we'll find another date. So if we have a fight,
Or chuck us a load of money. No, we won't do it for that. It's just the scores.
I'm spear tackling Rylan and then I'm ground and pounding him. The only way I'm going to beat him is on top, on the floor.
Yeah.
And how are you taking on Norton?
I suppose I've just got to make... I'm younger.
Mm.
So
you've got asthma, though.
I'm probably faster. Yeah, I've got asthma. But, So I think I just stay on my toes and in and out.
In a fight, would you have an asthma pump sort of round your neck like a necklace or in the pocket or just to the side? What would you
do? I'd have it in my mouth instead of a gum guard. Constantly be in my mouth.
Yeah.
And then if someone punched me, I'd just get a blow of Ventolin from it, so it'd actually be positive.
Perfect. Okay, well, sounds good. Well, Eurovision, get in touch. We'll have a straightener with Rylan and Norton. In the O2, Indigo O2, on some sort of bare knuckle boxing event. Anyway, Josh, it's time to introduce Brian Connolly.
Well, Rob, do you want to give him the big build-up?
One of the best comedians this country's ever produced, all-rounder, family entertainment.
Your hero.
One of my heroes. I saw him as a kid. He's still as funny now as he was then. He's doing Panto all through Christmas, which he secretly plugs the whole way through his interview, which I do respect. But Brian Connolly, father of two... And a very, very funny man and a good bloke. This is Brian Connolly. Welcome to the podcast, Brian Connolly. I'm very excited about this, Brian.
I've got moist. I'm very excited. And I would like to apologise for my visual thing that you're seeing.
Yeah, you've got a line down the screen.
Well, do you know what? You say apologise. We just had some the classic mute problems on Zoom.
Yeah.
And you're, when you were speaking, we couldn't hear you. And your face was so funny, I thought, he's doing a bit. This is him doing like a kind of, I can't...
I'm built for comedy.
Yeah.
I've even got the comedy screen. Let me point out to the listeners, when we're in lockdown, just before lockdown, we bought this computer, Whopper Chopper, does the old fingerprint, you haven't got to do anything. But we never realised the blooming... So look, there's a crack
in
the...
You've got a line down the middle.
Oh, in the camera, yeah.
I know. So, I'm doing the one shot, and my next door neighbour come around because they got a good computer, and we couldn't get it on. So I'm in the middle there of this, you know, the great big sort of 20 by 20 screen with this blimmin' thing. And you're right, I do. And people only when I was walking down the street, they're going, "Yeah, all right, Bri." Yeah,
I should take a photo of it so we could put it online. That line down your head. I've got it perfect. You've made it here. So, Brian, how many kids you got? Let's start off with that. Two kids.
I have two girls. I've got Lucy and Amy. Lucy is, as you just saw, because of my age, she's helped me get on this podcast. In fact, I have to say, this is the very first podcast I've ever done it ever in my life.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. Here we go.
I've done radio. You see, what's the difference between radio and podcast? Tell me that one.
That we don't have to play a song. We can just babble on for as long as we want. There's no time restraints.
No bosses as well. There's no man
nice
telling
one.
Us what to do.
But we can say things like bum and poo.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah, I'm going to say it now. Fuck. Yeah. I just said it, man. I've never ever said it. I think there's people out there going, I can't believe it. It's going to get in the papers and everything.
Did you work clean then, completely, basically, all your stuff?
Yeah. You had to. When I was doing my show, I had a joke where, you know, I had to say, I wanted to say bum, and I was not allowed to say bum. And no one, and I can't believe it, you know, like in the, now, everyone can say fart. You know, you can say fart in pantomime. You were never, ever allowed to do that. But now it's very acceptable, because I suppose the sort of rule is, if you're, you know, a little kid going to school, you know, how would the teacher react? You just go, what are you doing, Johnny? Well, I just farted. You know, so that was always the rule.
The times have changed. But then you also did have a TV show where you pretended to play the violin with your cock out.
Well, no, yeah, there's underlying that people worry that my penis had a nail on the end of it. No, it was my finger. I had the full song. I still do it in the main act. If I have to say, it's probably the best visual in the world. This whole
it's unbelievable.
Song, the song, The Devil Went Down at Georgia. And when I hold the bow with my finger... That they have that rock where the whole audience just go forward like
yeah, it's so
the
good.
The trouble is I can never follow it. I'll do it, and it always takes me ages to get the blimmin' thing on. So there's this hiatus where I'm sort of trying to get the thing on. Anyway, yeah. So what were we talking about? My kids.
Yeah, your kids. Yeah. So we'll get the sort of gushing stuff out of the way. But I've always loved all your stuff.
Well, we said on this podcast that Rob saw you, and that's
in his Butlins. Kind of. When I was
in
a kid.
Butlins. How old have you been, Rob?
I can't remember. It was you were doing a routine where you sort of had a pretend baby in a buggy and it was crying, and then all the Dangerous Brian stuff. I remember watching that on the telly, having the VHS and things like that, and we all watched it as a family and absolutely loved it. And that's like that's my ideal comedy, is when you can watch it with your nan, your brother, your auntie, everyone, and everyone finds it funny. But yeah, he's an absolute hero of mine. So very excited to be doing this, Brian.
You're the reason that night is the reason Rob Beckett is here now.
I left the stage early that night because I thought there's a weird kid in the audience with great dog. He's smiling at me. Stage manager said, "You've only done 20 minutes." I said, "That kid's shitting the life out of me."
It's just teeth and hair. What is that in the middle?
I remember that routine. I've still got, I never ever throw one prop away. I love props. I love visual comedy. I think visual comedy goes right across the board, young, old.
You still got that pram then?
Still got it up in the loft. Because what happens was the baby used to come out. I had the baby made. It was the ugliest baby ever. I used to do a couple of baby jokes. Then I put it in there, and there was a very popular song that "We Are the World, We Are the Children." And then I used to put the baby in the pram. And then I had a little lever, and the baby used to play a little trumpet in the pram. Just go, and I'd be there rocking it. I think once I had kids, I go, I don't want to relate to them at all. So I took out all my kid jokes, all my baby routine. When I get out of the house, I just want to forget those kids now.
And so what point in your career did you have the kids?
I was doing really well. And then it all went wrong. I had kids.
Now you're on a podcast.
How old are they now, Brian?
So we've got Lucy, who's 20, and Amy, who's 25. Lucy works as an events manager at a very popular cinema chain. And Lucy wants to be a comedian.
Oh, wow.
And she's a great singer. And she's done a little bit of work. She's done a bit of acting. And she's got a pantomime.
Oh, wicked. Oh.
Yeah, she's doing pantomime in Richmond. Their love of singing has always been there as well. But Lucy just has that extra, really wanting to be in the biz.
So how are you going to feel watching her in panto?
Well, I'm not. I'm working. the trouble is, Anne-Marie, my lovely wife, will have to decide which one she goes to. Because we start rehearsals the same time. And we finished at the same time.
And where are you? Where's your panto this year?
Is it Woking? Is it Woking?
Yeah, thank you very much, Rob. See, I bet I would have ended up in Worthing or something.
No,
like
it's Woking, Cinderella, Brian Connolly, Cinderella, 2nd of December through to the 31st of December.
Oh, mate, no, listen.
Buy tickets now.
No,
from 13 quid. Oh, that's got... If you're going to go and see panto, you've got to go and see Brian Connolly, Cinderella, surely.
Well, how old are your children now, guys?
Mine are 6 and 4. I reckon they really enjoy it. I'll have to bring them down.
They are panto age. And what about you, Josh?
And mine are 4 and 1.
One, obviously, yeah. Sometimes if I've got friends like that, I sit them right at the back. That's where the baby sort of kicks off.
Oh, there's no way I'm bringing the baby.
No, I'm going to come down this year. If you're at Woking, it's not far from me.
I'm telling you, you will love it and you'll go, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. It's huge. It's a big, big show. And I always say it's like one big variety show. When you say Cinderella, that's just the skeleton to hang on as much comedy as possible. And it's... And I would say, give me the first week full and I'll take care of the rest. It's word of mouth. It's making them cry with laughter. And I love panto because it ticks all the boxes because you've got your pathos, your comedy, your dancing, your acting, your ad-libbing when you've got the little kids up at the end, which I can wangle because, you know, you know someone in it now. So if you come, I will get you. How do you think your children will react to being... part of this is that little bit right at the end where I talk to them and we do something like I am the music band or Old MacDonald had a phone. How will your children react to being on stage?
Well, I brought mine out on stage when I did Southend Cliffs, and one of the older one is quite shy, and then the younger one spoke a little bit and stuff. So that, I think they'd go out, but the younger one would probably talk and the older one would just clam up. She sort of like always lets the younger one go first and do it.
Well, we're going to find out. And what about you, Joss?
I think my daughter, who's 4, would... I think she'd panic. But you must have that all the time because kids are 4. Like, you must have loads of techniques, right, for dealing with kids.
You have to... I want the quietest kids. I get the usherettes to choose them. I will not be responsible for that because there could be fights. We have 4. Well, all I want is 4 little kids and I want the quietest kids in that room. I don't want the mad ones.
Yeah.
And I just want them looking sweet. And then, of course, you never know what they're going to do, you know. So, but the audience love it. It is. You can throw everything at a pantomime, but those kids at the end. And I wanted to say, as I've got older, I don't push for any comedy. I just let it happen. And I think more than anything, as a parent now, all I want to see is that child having a lovely time.
Yeah.
And that means more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, people always say, but it is true. It's educating little kids into the excitement of live and being in the here and now and putting your iPhones out of the way. And I say to them, I say, do you know what? When you go home, you're going to all talk about this. You're going to be sitting in the car talking about it. And do you know why? Because you've shared this experience. You've shared it. You've put your phones away. And it is something, as you well know, guys, it's addictive, that live.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I still remember. Like, I was only 4 or 5, but seeing you and like that being made to laugh with other people in a big room by someone on stage with that light on them, I was mesmerised by it. And you don't really forget that kind of thing, especially the kind of thing you're into, and you're into arts and the theatre and stuff. But, yeah, no, it's amazing.
And did you have your children come and watch you from an early age then?
Well, they both were. I got them in the show. With pantomime. Amy is wonderfully talented, but she's never quite had that confidence to get out there. Lucy is slightly different. I think Amy takes after Anne-Marie, my wife, and Lucy takes after me. But Lucy desperately wanted to be part of it. So I had a, you don't have it now, but they used to have little teams of the babes. So you'd have 10 little kids that would be part of it. And I got her to be one of the babes and she would learn the dance routines. But I always had another costume made because I've heard of people that, yes, they're 10 kids. They take one out while the celeb's daughter or son could do it. And then that poor child that was left out, obviously, because they didn't have a costume. But I went, nope, I want an 11th costume. I want everything in 11s so that little Luce can dip in and out. And then right at the very end, when I spoke about the bear, the fairy would come out and we'd get Lucy when she was tiny, and Amy would do this, say about, I don't know, like about 3 or 4, and she would come out with the fairy with the bear and give it to the child who's a similar age. And then I would go to Lucy, I'd go, hello, what's your name? She'd go, Lucy. And I'd go, how old are you? She would go, I'm 3 3/4. And I'd go, have we ever met before? And she'd go, no, Daddy. You know, I've always had the kids around. You know, the dressing room has been their home, and especially in pantomime, and even right now, up until this year when Lucy's going to be doing her pantomime, she's been there. She's always been there, and they both have. You know, they've grown up in theatre, and when I've been in the West End in shows. When I was in the musical 9 to 5, I played the sadistic, sexist boss, and in the end of the first half, I get captured by the 3 girls that work in the office. They take me back to my house and tie me up, but they realise that I'm, you know, I'm into S&M and all that. So they put me in this rubber bleeding costume with the ball, all chains. Anyway, so this is the end of the first half. All through the second half, I have to wear the same costume. So in the interval, when I'm there for a year and a half, you know, I'm sitting there with my daughter having a cup of tea in the dressing room, dressed in all this gear. And she took a photo of me and she posted it on Instagram where you go, you know, bring your kid to work day. I totally forgot. You're there for a year. You forget you're sitting there in a rubber costume. You know?
It just becomes so normal. Yeah. I mean, what was it like, though, like when you had your kids about, you know, 20 years ago and stuff, and your show was on ITV, and at that point, telly was getting millions and millions of viewers, way more than it does now. So, you know, it must have been difficult. The school gates were like, kids loved you. Like, I loved you at that age. I'm a bit older than your daughters, but, you know, what was it like for them, you know, with their dad being like the famous funny guy?
Dad was dad, you know, they grew up with it, so they didn't know any different. But I made a conscious decision. They went to an American school. They went to a place in Hillingdon called ACS, and from kindergarten they were there, and no one knew who I was, and no one knew, you know, because they were all American kids or international kids. But they went there and no one knew me, and I wanted that.
Oh, really? Was that a decision because you were sort of so well known, you thought if they went there, they'd have their own identity?
No, it was a good school as well. We knew it was a good school. And we, you know, we just felt that this would be the best way that, you know, people would take them on face value and not go, oh, that's Brian Connolly's daughter there.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, mums and dads. There was a few that were British, you know, that were there, but predominantly it was all, it was an international school. So that's where we went.
I can imagine that you're quite a fun dad. Do you know what I mean? I can imagine you being playful and enjoying, like, acting out with children and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. I think that's why I'm good in panto, because I always say I'm like a cheeky little teenager.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm like. And I've always been like that. And I've always embarrassed my kids and enjoyed that very much.
In what ways would you do it?
Well, we were on holiday and, you know, we were in a completely foreign country. Not one person speaks English, but the band are playing a song in my key. You know, we're at the bar and they've got a little two-piece sort of little... And I'm going, I know this one. And they go, Dad, don't. And I will get up. I will get up and I will sing and I'll work the crowd and all that. Yeah, that child is very much in me, you know.
Yeah.
I've always been like that. I've always been silly. I've always, you know.
Well, you've got that face. You've got a funny face. Like, everyone was just trying to get the Zoom work and you weren't doing anything, but it felt like a bit.
Yeah.
So, like, how are you serious with your kids? Like, I've sort of got that stupid face as well. No offence, but you know what I mean?
I can't imagine you as a disciplinarian.
No, not at all. No, I'm not. I'm terrible. And, of course, Anne-Marie, my lovely wife, is sort of a bit like, you know, she has to sort of... I tend to just, I don't know, what do I do? I think I've only had a go once. once ever, you know, and I do.
What was that? Can you take us through that?
It was just about being not polite, you know, and it was just a moment where I just went, no, I've got a thing about being polite. You know, I've always, it's like when we go to a restaurant, always very polite to the waiters and all that sort of thing, and want my kids to be like that.
Were you good with the, I mean, the teenage years, particularly with girls, I think, is a really tough gig for a parent. Do you know what I mean?
So I was working. I've always worked, and them coming to see me, unless I've been on tour. But even then, being on tour, and very much my sort of my stand-up era sort of ended just when the girls sort of turned up, and then I was doing lots of musicals, and I've done a lot of them and telly, and so they were always part of that, you know. So. And I would very much involve them. If I am on tour, I go, well, I'll look after Luce this week. She's off school. She can come with me. And they love it, being in the hotel and of course, being with everyone there. But there's, I was being reminded, because I said, right, I've got to talk about the kids. Emily, what can I say? She says, tell them, oh, you know what I used to do when we were on holiday? If they would only be about six. And I go, see that kid in the pool over there? Will you go and talk to them? They go, no. I go, go on, because I know if Lucy has a little friend, that's it. They're going to play. They're going to keep out of the way for a while.
Yeah.
I would pay her to go and talk to the kid. I go, I'll give you £5. She goes, I'm not in five. I go, I'll give you £10. If you just go over, you don't have to be friends with them, but just go and talk to them. And then they go over and talk, and that'd be it. Bang.
Yeah, and it's off. It's normally that bit apprehensive about that opening bit.
Because I knew. That was it. Then I got little friends same age, and we get pally with their mum and dad. We go to the bar, and as long as they're happy.
Do you make holiday friends, Brian?
I do a little bit, but not. I don't know. You know,
I don't think people should.
We went crabbing once, and we were in Southend or somewhere, and we went out and we bought the things, and Anne-Marie and Amy was on the beach, and me and Luce went out to sort of like the pier, and we're sort of doing it all. Anyway, Luce is upset; she can't get anything, and so there's a little kid next to me, and I bought his crabs. I said, I'll give you £10 for the crabs. He said, a big bucket full, and we went back, and everybody went, oh my god, look how many you got. The other kid, you know, this is what I'm like. I'd sort of come back, and I said to you know my brother. You know,
of course, we were. He's floor manager. We've worked with him over the years.
And he said, the best advice you ever gave me, Brian, is when you said, it all gets good when you can bribe them. Once you can bribe them, that's it. That's it. Your worries are over. You've got that sleep deprivation, those early years and all that game. But then as you get a little bit older, and maybe you do the little star thing on the fridge where, you know, you need, oh, I'm going to take one star away. No, well, you're not going to get Father Christmas one. Like, oh, no, you can't do. Oh, you're not having those sweets because you didn't. You're there. You're on the other side.
And have they brought any boyfriends or girlfriends home or anything, Brian? Okay, how's that been?
It's been great. I'm fine with it. I mean,
psychologically, the first time, it might, you know, obviously they're a bit older now, so but like when they first start dating, I think it's a tough first thing to deal with. And like after a couple of years and there's been a couple of different people, you sort of just get used to it. But the first time.
Look, you can moan at them about maybe drinking too much or, hey, don't take drugs and all that, but this is very much part of the circle of life and things moving on, and you need to find out what you need to find out, and I, in no way, I'm going to, you know, be upset. I mean, you don't want them coming in, you know, I don't even want to explain what you'd be worried about, but you don't want, you don't want that.
I think we can guess.
But Luke, Amy has got a lovely partner now. Dash, who's a lovely guy, and they just, you know, seem so happy together, and that's what you want. You know, you just, that's all you want at the end of the day. You know, is for them to be happy.
But it must be the bit when, if they bring someone home when they're like 16, 17, and let's, you know, they're the bloke's a knobhead or the girl's a knobhead. You know they're a knobhead. Your wife knows they're a knobhead, but you just have to let them find out that they're a knobhead.
They never ever brought anyone back because they were worried. They knew that I would say something, and I'd drop them in it, or I'd say something embarrassing about something that happened years ago. They never, ever. In fact, my brother was the same. My young brother, Al, would never, ever bring anyone back because he was always worried that I'd say something. Not have a dig or anything, but just, I always put my foot in it.
Or just break into song. It's that kind of thing.
Well, of course. you know?
And so what was it like the first time they did bring someone?
Well, the first time is really a lovely guy called Dash now, and Amy's 24. And before that, I was aware of people, and Anne-Marie was aware, but Dash is the first one that's been back and been welcomed into the family. You've got to. You have to. That's part of, you know, we did. You know, everyone has to. And so you're very, you know, you've got to find my iPhone. Like, where is she? Where is she? What's she doing? Go and find my iPhone. Oh, we're all right. We're okay. Don't let her get the train. No, she's got to do Uber. No, don't let her. No, it's too late to get the train.
Yeah.
You know, and all these sort of things. But really, you have to let them go, because that's it. That's part of it. And as long as they're around, they need to grow up, but they're around, and you get them home, we're a very close family. Anne-Marie's a very close, got a very close family. Me and Anne-Marie have been together 31 years.
Oh.
We've been married 25 now. So, but you know, and that's not bad in showbiz, let's be honest. But I am a family bod, you know, that's my well. People say, what do you do? This family for me, you know, it's going to the cinema, it's going out for meals, it's getting us all together at weekends, things like that. You know, so that's been very important in my life.
And when did you find that, like, you've got more time on your hands now? Do you know what I mean? There's that period of whatever, 10, 12 years or whatever, when it's just parenting, parenting, parenting. And what did it feel like when you came out of that? Did you feel like, I think a lot of people come out of that, they're like, what do I do now with this time?
Mm. Josh, do not kid yourself. It doesn't happen. It does not happen. I swear on my life, I'm not doing it for comedy or anything. It doesn't happen. I used to think that when I was younger. I go, oh, they get older, they drift away. No, they don't. They're around all the time. Or you've got other problems. Oh, we need to sort out. We've got to sort out my car, all my tax returns. It doesn't, no, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, you basically get three boilers that you have to sort out.
It's like in films, you know, but when they drift away. No, they're there. They love it. You've got three meals, washing machines, everything's working here. Mum does the ironing, you know.
And then they have kids and need babysitters.
Yes, that's it. I see it doesn't stop. It doesn't have an you know, it's not like bye-bye. And they go off, you know.
And were you excited about the prospect of grandchildren? And they're a bit young now but as they get older.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I am, of course. You know, sort of that's another part of it, yeah. I've never really thought about it, but it would be lovely to be a grandfather, granddad.
Was it difficult when they were born? Because you were so busy there, that part of your career.
When Lucy, Amy was born, I was really on top form. And, Bron Conley's show was getting 12, sometimes 15 million people. And people never even give that a second thought at the time. Yeah. You know, like EastEnders was getting 30. You know, they were getting, you could not touch the soaps. Yeah. They were all getting 25, 30 million. So anyway, so Amy's, it's just about to be born and we can rush to the hospital and all that game. And then she's there. And it was like a war zone. I thought I'd just be up the eating end, just going, go on, love, push. No, it was all like, I was really involved. And it was all happening. And then when Amy come out, it was like this blue blob. You know, it was sort of, I don't know if it was scary. It was really scary. And I was now aware that they take them over to like this weighing thing. And then they put a little tube in their mouth and go, and then everything comes out because they don't hit them on the bum anymore. And that all comes out and then they start crying. So the baby is all blue and it's all over there. And I'm so worried. I'm going, is it okay? Is it all right? It's very quiet. And they're going, yeah, don't worry. I go, no, please tell me, is it all right? And the woman turned around with Amy and went, it's a puppet!
No way.
I'm not joking. I swear on my mother's life. I swear on my life.
No.
That is
incredible.
I know. But it would just remind listeners that many, many moons ago, my catchphrase was, it's a puppet. Which I'm reminded of every day for the last 35
years. Yeah, I bet. Oh, wow. On the birth of your child, though. That's, you don't need your catchphrase then.
It was blue. And they were all over there, busy and around. Okay, is it all right? And then another time when Amy was six and we were at a pizza restaurant and I had my baseball cap on and my glasses and we were having food. She went, Dad, can you take your hat off? And I went, yes. She said, can you take your glasses off? I went, yes. And she stood up. She went, everybody, this is Brian Conley. Oh, I'll never forget that. And you want the absolute truth? What happened next? I swear on my life, this is what happened next. Sat down, ate a bit of pizza, choked on the cheese and spewed up all over a plate. Then I had to pick the plate up with all the sick on.
Oh my
God.
Go
to the restaurant. So there you go. That's being a parent. And then one time we're at a hotel and the pool area was quite some way away from our little apartment on the hotel. And we had Lucy, Amy, in this sort of like a nappy thing that you could go in the pool with. It's like a waterproof nappy. And we're sort of looking at me and... oh, God, look at that lump. Look at that lump. Oh, God, she shit herself. Oh, bleeding now. Oh, we've got to go all the way back. I went, oh, don't worry. And so I went to her. You know, she was sitting by the pool. And then I put my hand down, grabbed the poo, put it in my pocket, and then went over to the shower, you know, by the pool. And then I'm squeezing my pocket to get the flim, you know, the poo to sort of dissolve in my pocket. Oh, well, my what the God. Fuck? What am I doing? This is being a dad. I'm on the telly every night. I'm squeezing shit out of my pocket now.
Oh my God.
Oh, one last question that we always ask. Is there one thing parenting wise that Anne-Marie does with the kids that annoys you, but you don't say it, you just swallow it? And if she was to listen, she'd go, yeah, that's a fair point. Is there one thing you clash on with parenting?
Do I really want to drop myself on a shit in any way whatsoever? She's so good with them. She really is. You know, and that's it really. My only gripe is we've got a walk-in wardrobe and I've got the back of a chair. That's my only gripe. No, I love it a bit. And I don't know. I don't know what to say, really, because I don't want to drop myself in it. But there isn't really. There isn't anything. You know, if yeah. I analyse it, we both shared this experience, but very much I've had to go out there and work, and Anne-Marie's been there 24/7 with them, you know, and they're great kids, and that's all you want, isn't it?
Oh,
it's been an absolute joy to talk to you.
It is. Thank you so
and
much,
I think
Brian.
The thing for me is when Josh went, so how do you find that emptiness when they've gone? And you go, no, mate, that doesn't happen. Don't live in your dream world. You've got them now, and you will have them till you die.
Absolute
Thanks
perfect,
so much,
ending.
Brian.
Thanks, mate. Brian Connolly there. I love that. Do you know what, Rob?
I love
he
Brian
wasn't
Connolly
on promo,
so
and it's the most promo we've ever given anything.
Well, do you know what? Panto is for kids, though, and it's quite interesting to hear about it. And my kids are definitely the right age for it, but no, he's an absolute legend, Brian Connolly.
Yeah.
Or did he just ultimately pull our pants down and did the greatest plug-in of all time?
Yeah.
An old Wily Fox.
He's absolutely played us. You wouldn't get that much plug-in on Norton, I tell you that, whether you're the floor manager or not.
We did get It's a Puppet and a Pocket Full of Shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was fair as well. But no, I absolutely loved that. And I'm definitely going to take the kids. But also, like, from a theatres were shut for 2 years, so if you want to go and support your local theatre, it's a good thing to do.
Do you know what we should do, Rob?
Yeah.
Michael can get together a list of the people in pantomimes around the country and we can have a look at some of the weirdest people that are doing.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. I'm just trying to look for Plymouth.
Not for sleeping. Michael, he's got
no,
to do it.
No, he's an absolute nightmare.
Okay. How about, next? I tell you what, one episode, what we should do is one episode, we'll just go through. You give me, each episode we do this from now on, you give me a town or city and I'll tell you who's playing there.
Yeah, perfect. Up until Panto season. As part of our go to the Pantos and support the theatres
message.
Initiative. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Also, as well, that's how altruistic is that? We've not even in Panto.
No.
What the listeners are going to expect is we're going to announce a huge Panto show. Yeah. Yeah. Parenting Hell Panto.
Yeah, just to be clear, maybe we should be promoting our own theatre shows. We shouldn't be spending the time promoting fucking Pantos that we're not in. We've got a tour to sell, mate.
I've still got some shows on sale in the autumn. Go Eastbourne.
Yeah.
Somewhere else. I think Southend.
No, sorry, I'm not going to Eastbourne, Rob, because I'm watching Craig Charles in Aladdin. Sorry.
And if you like Panto stories, listen to the Jared Christmas episode where he talks about his time with Priscilla Presley.
Oh, that is a great Panto story. We're a big Panto place. Anyway, we've talked too much. Shall we go?
Yeah, bye.
Hello, Tom Allen here.
And Susie Ruffle.
We have a podcast called Like-Minded Friends. It's very much a celebration of, I don't know, what would you say, Suze, being queer?
Being queer, but also chit-chat. There's loads of straight people that love it, so I think that you should come along and listen to it.
There's something for everybody. It's been described as white noise for gays, but also we had a lovely section about Glade plugins.
So why don't you listen to it? Search Like-Minded Friends wherever you get your podcasts. That sounded quite professional, didn't it?
If you are not in the queue and you are waiting, then step to the side.
He got in touch. He said, yeah, sorry, mate, you didn't seem like yourself the other day. You've only met me 3 times.
The self-service checkout. I don't care what you're called. I'm not getting tricked into working here.
People at festivals in those stupid jester hats.
But do you know what a snake's penis looks like?
£2.69 for a bottle of water.
Why is your Wi-Fi code
social media
10 characters long?
People who do their shoes up.
I don't care if you're watching. Boot cut jeans.
What's upset you now?
Hello, I'm Paul McCaffrey.
And I'm Sean Wall.
And we are the hosts of the hit podcast, What's Upset You Now?
Each episode is only 15 minutes long. That is perfect for your commute.
Absolutely perfect. What, a little 15-minute bus drive to work? Stick an episode of What's Upset You Now on. What's it all about, Sean?
Well, me and Paul and a big-name comedy guest such as Tom Allen or Rob Beckett or Josh Widdicombe will rant about what has got our goat that week for only 15 minutes.
All those little things, like, for example, do you know Gatwick Airport are now charging you £5 to get dropped off at their door?
And now the sun's back out and people are off doing yoga in the park again.
New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. What's Upset You Now with me, Paul McCaffrey.
And me, Sean Walsh.